Thank you very much. Pleasure to be with you tonight for a little two-night-in-a-row deal. And you know, Ian Anderson, he is a crazy guy, genius crazy. You know, it's the good crazy. He's right. That's an old song, too, but he's spot on with it. It was a new day yesterday, but it's an old day now, so let us go boldly into our future and find out, for example, what is the future of Egypt? Hey, Paul, normally we go to our little floating break like now, but I don't feel like it. So to hell with politics right now. I'm sick of it. Gets everybody jacked up. I don't want to talk about it anymore.
You sound like me when I was doing what you're doing now for a business.
Oh, yeah. What's going on in Egypt? We got the Russians over there. We got, we just stuck some missiles over there kind of close to Vladimir Putin's crew and his country.
Well,
and
you know,
so he's rattling his saber, and now we got the Muslim Brotherhood and over there. What's up with Egypt? What's going on?
One of the cycles that we watch runs about 21, 22 years, and if you back up that cycle, you find that it corresponds exactly with the fall of the old Soviet Union, which is now coming back to elements of what it was in that period. And the Arab Spring is coinciding with the new cycle. So in other words, if the last incarnation of this cycle was back in the late 80s and early 90s, the current incarnation of it is playing out both in terms of elements of the old Soviet Union returning to some prominence and the Arab Spring being the next stage of that same cycle, and it's affected an extraordinary number of countries at this point, Tunisia and Libya and Egypt and so on. What we see in terms of the time tracks having to do with Egypt, when you run Hosni Mubarak, which we included in that stack of time tracks tonight, and then you look at when he took over, which actually was the day of or the day after Anwar Sadat was assassinated back in October, I think, of 1981.
Yep.
You find that this is, in fact, a transition. It's not temporary. It's the real thing. The problem is that for most of the last 30 years, and probably when Nasser was there as well, and even when Sadat was in power, Egypt has been largely run by the army. And the army has seen to it that they are protected against what's been going on lately. And I think what we're going to see is a very, very slow handover of political control in Egypt from the army. This is not going to happen quickly. And it's probably going to take the better part of the next 3 to 5 years, maybe but at least.
Have you looked at whether or not Vladimir Putin is actually trying to put the old Soviet Union back together? And if how long before he starts rolling into other countries?
You know, there's a great line about Putin that you can take the man out of the KGB, but you can't take the KGB out of the man.
Ain't it the truth?
Isn't it the truth? I think that he's already reestablished elements of the old Soviet Union. The difference being that they're smart enough this time to realize that the way to hurt us or break us in some way is economically, never mind militarily. They've been watching the Chinese and getting some cues from the Chinese about how to control the Westerners. And I think that's the route that Putin is looking to take with all of the natural gas and whatnot that they're sitting on and can control. So, yes, I think Putin is reestablishing it in a kind of sort of roundabout way. And as far as Egypt is concerned, as I said, I think the army is going to give back control very, very slowly over the next 3 to 5 years. I don't see it happening quickly at all.
But who are they giving it back over to?
Well, probably the Muslim Brotherhood, because they're the ones who won the election. And one of the problems with instituting democracy is that it doesn't always come out the way we want it to.
That's the
I mean,
problem with democracy. Democracy is just mob rule. This is a constitutional republic, or it was. So,
well,
yeah.
I'm talking about voting. I'm really talking about giving the people the vote. I think what you're basically doing here is doing a modified version of what was going on when Mubarak was in power, basically. And I think that that's again going to continue. And I think the Muslim Brotherhood is smart enough to let it play out slowly, because I think there's a chance that they're going to be able to take it by force. The military is too strong and has been for, you know, what, 60, 70 years. So I think that's what we're going to see in Egypt. And I think we may see Syria, we may see that end with rule going to some semblance of the people in the country by perhaps as early as the end of this year.
Gotcha.
So, all right. And we're going to see more of this. I mean, if you remember, the Soviet Union took about, let's see, from about 87, 88 to 93 or 4 to actually come apart. So maybe as much as 7 years before we see the smoke clear.
That's going to be some boring mainstream media news for the next 7 years, you're telling me?
I think so.
Okay, yes. All right. Well, we need a little economic water. The people need water. So I've got to give them the break that I promised them earlier. So we're going to take that now. 2 minutes, and we'll be back with Paul Gersio. This is the one and only Coast to Coast AM. All righty then. Well, war with Iran. What do you see?
Probably not.
Good.
And probably not this year if it happens at all. I think we put enough of a dent in their product with the centrifuges that we slowed down the likelihood of them being able to accomplish their plans in any reasonable length of time. And I think they're going to find it more to their advantage to sort of join the rest of the human race and maybe swear off the their nuclear prospects, at least in terms of the period of time immediately around the corner. I'm more concerned actually with Israel getting antsy and doing something that's not really necessary than I am about the Iranians. And I'm not, you know, I'm not down on the state of Israel. I just think that we don't have the caliber of politicians in Israel anymore, or the, you know, or the secret police, the Mossad and whatnot, the people who managed to you know, to get the hostages out of Entebbe back in the 70s, ain't running things anymore. It's a whole different, you know, it's a whole different environment. And in the same way that we don't have the great talented politicians that we used to have, and even the ones we didn't like, I think, you know, we can agree we're very talented people. You know, even people like Nixon and Barry Goldwater and LBJ and whatnot, these were towering political figures who really knew what they were doing, essentially. Nixon was an expert on foreign affairs, maybe the best foreign affairs expert we ever had. In fact, what's interesting is that Nixon's health care plan, and for that matter, Dole's in 96 when he was running against Clinton, was actually more adventuresome than the one that Obama got passed. And I think that in this election, Mitt Romney's going to have a terrible time trying to explain his way out of this whole thing, because actually people in Massachusetts who are having to pay this penalty and, you know, et cetera, are extremely happy with this program. And I defy Mr. Romney to come up with a reasonable explanation for why the thing he thought was such a good model for the country is now not a good model for the country.
Are we talking about politics again?
I mean, well, you know, the thing is, one of the things that we've always been involved in, George and I, is using Merlin to try to figure out where the politics is going. And this political year, it's a joke. I mean, it's a sideshow. And we're pretty disgusted with it in general. One of the things that's interesting, however, in terms of terrorism, is that there's two time tracks I sent you, Osama bin Laden's time track and the time track for 9/11. And if you pull them up and look at them, you'll notice how remarkably similar they are. Both of them are roughly devoid of activity on the top line, the top 6 years.
Yeah, I'm looking at it.
And they start to ratchet up at the beginning of the middle line, or early into the middle line, about maybe a quarter of the way across. And then they both get very, very, very busy over the years in between there and now. And if you look at in 2011, on bin Laden's, it literally drops out right around the time he died, and the 9/11 run drops off as well. So I think what that's saying to us, what we're extracting from that, is that the era of the major terrorist hit of the 9/11 sort is probably over. Not that there won't be the occasional suicide bomber and so on, somebody, you know, opening fire on an army base and so on, but the major kind of hits, the taking out of a bunch of 747s or knocking down more buildings, it looks to be very unlikely that we've moved away from that, and not so much because we knocked off bin Laden, but because bin Laden's run and the 9/11 run are so remarkably similar, and they're two completely different dates, two completely different years. Okay, you'd look at the two of them and you'd say, well, these almost look like clones of each other. Well, that's right. But we found over the years that when time tracks that are run for the same situation but different dates, having to do with that situation, when they show a parallelism, especially at a high degree, they are essentially making the same statement. And my guess is, although I didn't run it, that if I ran things like the first World Trade Center bombing and the Oklahoma City bombing and so on, we would see those tapering off at this period of time as well. Because you have to remember, back in the middle 90s, we were contacted by the Joint Chiefs of Staff and asked to prepare a white paper on what Dr. Hart and I were doing, which we did. I got all excited because I said, wow, we've hit the big time. The Pentagon Joint Chiefs of Staff are looking into what we're doing. And George basically said to me, Don't get excited. He said, the problem with the Pentagon is, from the standpoint of being a contractor to them, is that you spend 75% of your time educating the new person about what the old person already knew, because they cycle people in and out of those jobs about every 18 months. So 75% of our time is spent briefing people on stuff that the old people already knew about. He said, this is just going to fall into the great black hole at the Pentagon, never to be heard from again. And it's interesting that we provided them with 40 copies of this.
Wow.
And on the morning when the plane hit that building,
yep,
40 copies of our report were in file closets in that building. It did us no good, or them no good, because they didn't pay any attention to it.
Let me ask something, Paul, without giving away the program here. Talk to us about what the time tracks actually are. First of all, I mean, just in the broad strokes, how did you develop this system? I mean, I'm not trying to get you to give away the thing so that somebody else can come up with
it. I'll tell you.
But how does this work?
I'll tell you what I did. There was a fellow that RCA had under contract back in the 30s and 40s and early 50s a fellow named John Nelson, John H. Nelson. He had a job that they called radio propagation analyst. And what John was essentially doing was he was attempting to forecast the appearance of sunspots and solar flares of a high degree that were going to interfere with point-to-point radio communications, because you got to remember, in those years, there were no satellites. So you had to use shortwave. And shortwave bounces off the ionosphere and whatnot and is severely affected by sunspots and solar flares. So RCA hired John Nelson to see if there was a way to forecast the appearance of high-level solar flares and sunspots. Nelson discovered that if you take certain what are essentially astrological measures, okay, not the, you know, not the sun signs and the, you know, and predicting the kind of nonsense that we see in books and magazines and newspapers, not that, but that certain planets in our solar system, when they line up in certain mathematical angles, that those angles correspond to the appearance of sunspots and solar flares. So he was so good that he could predict last week that next Tuesday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, there was going to be a Class A solar flare and be right within a couple of minutes. Okay. He did this under contract to RCA for 30 or 40 years. John Nelson was my entree to some of this information. And I figured if Nelson was able to do that kind of fine forecasting using essentially planetary angles and things, the classical ones, conjunctions, squares, oppositions, that kind of thing.
Sure.
That maybe, just maybe, that's what the ancients had inadvertently tripped over when they cooked up astrology, that it wasn't all nonsense, but it wasn't all true either, and that what it really had to do with was not whether the king was going to make war on his next-door neighbor and all of that sort of thing, but rather when time was going to shift in certain ways that would have an impact on the events of that period, because the effect of those angles was going to have an effect on the whole interconnections of electrical energy in this solar system. And if you look up John H. Nelson and read up on Nelson, you'll be able to figure out where I got my original ideas from. And I found out about Nelson from a guy who taught astrology, but was actually a high-level copywriter for J. Walter Thompson, the advertising agency. He did this on the side, and he had, again, also tripped over Nelson and realized that Nelson was absolutely onto something. Well, what George and I have done is we've taken some of that information, we've stripped it all down, eliminated all the junk, all the stuff that doesn't produce consistently accurate results, like being able to forecast a solar flare last week on next Tuesday. And we've come up with a formula that allows us to generate pictures of what time is going to look like on a certain date in the future from a specific date in the past.
Gotcha. All right, hold up right there, Paul.
That's what Merlin is.
Okay, gotcha. All right, well, cut you off just as you got to the right, to the tip of the point. All right, our guest tonight is Paul Garcia. He'll be with us for another little while, and then we'll talk to Stan Johnson, but we're not done yet with Merlin Mann. Glad you're with us tonight. Thanks a lot for being here. And this is the one, the only, Coast to Coast AM. We shall continue. We'll finish up our last segment with Paul Garcia when we come back. Just 2 minutes, please. This is Coast to Coast AM. Okay, Paul, we've run the gamut here tonight, so we might as well talk about Pope Benedict. What do the time tracks say about how long he will remain as Pope?
This looks like a critical year. I would say there's probably a 50-50 chance that we might lose him this year and elect another pope.
What do you mean, lose him?
If it is that, excuse me?
Now, what do you mean, lose him? Like health?
Yes.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. Also, or instead of, we may also be seeing at that same point in time, take a look at that, the time track for Benedict, you'll notice that in the 2012 year, beginning in late 2011 and extending into 2013, there's a very significant run-up of activity that's not like what's been going on and not really like what goes on afterwards. So when you get a one-year run-up like that on something like the Pope, when we had John Paul II pass on, it was something very similar to that. So I would say there's a chance that that's what it's expressing. If not that, the Catholic Church has been having some really serious problems. A lot of it fallout from the pedophile priest situation and so on. That we may be seeing more of that as well in terms of some sort of you know, attempt to make up for some of those things. I've always been amused that Benedict, who was a Hitler youth and got to be the Pope on Hitler's birthday, and ran the division of the church that for years was originally called the Inquisition. He was the real force behind the maneuvering that went on in terms of not reporting pedophiles to the authorities and so on, and moving them to other parishes and whatnot. That really wasn't John Paul II's doing. It was really Benedict's doing. If you do a little looking into it, you find out he was actually running that show. And you know, you'd expect with an uptick of activity in this year, something you know, very personal affecting him, either in terms of fallout from that activity, or health. On the other hand, one of the things that makes me think that this run up in the USA chart and whatnot is actually problematic, is because one of the people who'd be also affected by this in a major way is the British Prime Minister, David Cameron. And if you look at Cameron's run, it's very interesting. In late 2010, 2011, there's about a one-year burst of activity when he became the prime minister. Then 2012 is fairly quiet. There's some hiccups in it, but basically quiet. When you get to the end of 2012, beginning of 2013, the trend line goes nuts. And if you look at that in comparison to, say, the USA run, which also goes nuts at the same time, that is the beginning of 2013, you'd have to say that something that's going on here is also being reflected in his political life. And unlike us, you know, the parliamentary system is one in which if you're not getting support, you're out. And I would say there's a very good chance that over the next, say, 24 months or so, maybe sooner, David Cameron's going to be looking for another job. You know, in the case of Benedict, it looks like a one-year burst of activity, which then quiets down, and that would be essentially all that would be needed to change popes, essentially, because a pope is a pope as far as that goes. Once they've assumed the job, things sort of return back to normal as they have for hundreds of years. There's rarely anything more adventuresome going on other than the election of the new pope itself. In the case of something like the British government, however, if we were going to see fallout in the 2013-14-15 period that might be attributable to things going on here or in the financial markets, you'd see it in Cameron's run, and there it is. So one of the things people have to understand about what George and I are doing with this, we can't look at this and say, well, this is going to be good or that's going to be bad. What we can see is where the level of activity in the ongoing situation is going to change in some remarkable way. And then we have to sort of weigh what's going on historically to see if we can get a feel for what form that's going to take. What we've told people for years, however, is that the timing of these things is going to be far more accurate than our ability to characterize the nature of the change. We can't always figure that out, but we usually can find the point within, say, 3 to 6 months of where, you know, all hell is going to break loose and be very right about that, even though it may play out in a way that we hadn't expected, like, for instance, the last few years where everybody thought it was going to be, you know, as they said, pole shift and, you know, swine flu and, you know, et cetera. And it turned out to be the next near Great Depression. We didn't see that coming, and actually should have, because after the housing bubble, after the dot-com bubble, followed by the housing bubble, it should have been obvious that this was going to collapse, and I don't think anybody spotted it.
I'll tell you what, anytime I hear excessive advertising about, and I've said this a few times on the air, whenever I hear a bunch of advertising about 0% financing, 10 seconds out of bankruptcy, 0% financing, no income verification, and this goes on for a couple of years, yeah, I start thinking, watch this.
Yeah.
There's going to be a huge pop.
No question. You're absolutely right. The same thing is true, I think, and you probably chuckled over this, is some of these drugs they now advertise on TV, which spend 15 seconds telling you the pluses and 45 seconds telling you how you might die taking it.
Yeah, you wonder why we suggest that you not take this drug, actually.
Well, you know, the thing is, so many of these drugs eventually end up being in class action suits because of the people that died from taking them. On the other hand, however, there's stuff out there which has shown remarkable abilities to help. For instance, I've just finished reading a long article from a bunch of scientists at Berkeley who are saying that cold-pressed coconut oil, organic coconut oil taken in quantities of maybe 2 tablespoons a day, has been shown to have such a remarkable effect on abating Alzheimer's that they're seriously going to have to look into this. But, of course, you know the problem. There's no money in coconut oil. Okay, so who wants to do the research? But I'll tell you, my mother was going through serious dementia, and I put her on this back in December of 2010. She died in May of 2011. But over the next 3 or 4 months, her ability to know who was there and be able to carry on a decent conversation and so on was pronounced, okay? And there is research going on now to see whether coconut oil has that ability, because unlike glucose, which can only be produced by food broken down, coconut oil has the ability to fuel the connections in the synapses in the brain directly without having to be turned into glucose. So, you know, the effect might be as much as a 30 or 40% benefit to an Alzheimer's patient with no downside. Okay, no downside.
Yeah, but it doesn't cost $1 billion to join the
club
to make the drug.
That's exactly right. And the same thing is true of, I mean, if aspirin had recently been discovered, we'd have a hell of a time getting aspirin, because there was a discovery made about 60 years ago with something called DMSO, which
horse
is kind of like aspirin in a lot of ways. It does all kinds of remarkable things, but it's only approved for use by the FDA for a form of cystitis, you know, even though it's used in NFL locker rooms and in veterinary clinics by the
It's horse liniment. It's horse liniment. It works great.
I know.
Well, there's no money in it, though, Paul. You know that. If there's no money in it, nobody's going to get behind it.
Well, you know, it's funny. A few years ago, I had torn the ACL in my left knee. And I went looking around for something to treat it with because I didn't want to have the surgery done. And the doctor said to me, well, if you're not a serious sports person, if you're not playing tennis or golf or running or something, it's probably better to let it mend on its own, except it's going to take as long as 18 to 24 months because the ligament has a very small blood supply, so it's not going to mend quickly. Well, I went looking around for some kind of thing that I could use to try and speed that process up, and I tripped over a device that uses near-infrared LEDs that pulse, okay, at a particular rate. And I was able to acquire one of those devices. It healed up the knee in about 3 months instead of the 24 months they were telling me it was going to take. I sent George Norrie two of these, one out to California and one to St. Louis, so he had one in each place. He eventually tried this unit out, and we got on the air one night and started talking about the success he had had himself with this unit, and we got inquiries from coast-to-coast listeners that kept us busy answering mail for like 6 months. Okay, we got more queries about that device than we got about Merlin. And, you know, and in an era where a lot of us, I'm not sure what your age is, but I'm a boomer turning, you know, going into that retirement year period.
I'll do the Ayatollah thing. I'm 86, and on my next birthday, I will be 86. You know what I mean?
Right?
Every year,
well,
I turn 86.
These devices have a pronounced effect on injuries, muscular stuff, tears, tennis elbow, arthritic things, and it's FDA approved. But you know what? There's no money in it. Okay, like the DMSO, like the coconut oil, like a whole bunch of other stuff like that, you know, and you're not going to see it on the cover of Time magazine or have, you know, Frontline doing a piece on it because there's no money in it. And it's very unfortunate. These things get found out mostly by word of mouth because they can't make any money with them. So, but I'll tell you, from my experience with my mother and this coconut oil, I would recommend it to anybody who has a parent going through dementia to try it. It has no side effects. It doesn't produce any problematic thing, no rashes, no clogged arteries, nothing. Okay, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But if it does, in her case, for instance, the effect was pronounced, absolutely pronounced. My kids, who were, you know, 16 and 12 at the time, who she didn't even know anymore, they'd get on the phone and she didn't know who they were, told me about a month or so before she died that they'd called her for her birthday. She knew who they were. She was asking intelligent questions. I recorded an hour-long conversation with her about a month and a half before she died. It was like talking to a different person than the one who didn't know who I was when I went down there to visit 9 months earlier.
That's extraordinary.
Did not know who I was.
Well, bless her. Paul, I got to ask you something as we start running out of time here. What about do you have anything on the scope for the, and this is abruptly changing the subject, and I don't mean to do that, but I just want to get this answer from you before you have to go.
Sure.
And that is, what do you see about two things quickly? One of them is the, you know, the Brits are like armed to the teeth and the feet over this 2012 Olympics thing in London. Do you see anything on the scope for anything unpleasant in that regard?
I really don't.
You've got enough hardware to discourage it.
Well, you know, you'd actually almost expect that if there was going to be something like that, it would have occurred during the Queen's Jubilee, even more so than the Olympics.
Makes sense.
You know, we've gotten with all the surveillance stuff that we now have, with cameras everywhere and whatnot, not a whole lot gets missed. I mean, there have been a lot of plots that have been foiled in the last several years. We keep hearing little bits and pieces about it, but I'll bet if you could talk to the Secret Service or some of the clandestine agencies, they would have, you know, an armload of stories about stuff that we didn't hear about, but could have been a near miss, except they found it out. I think they're getting much, much better at that. In much the same way as I've been always somebody who thought in Iran and Afghanistan and Iraq, for instance, that never mind sending in 100,000 troops, you know, get the SEALs, you know, use the black arts people. You know, I mean, you got them, use them. And do it that way instead of having 20-year-old kids getting shot to hell and losing limbs and what. I mean, we're going to be paying, talk about money, we're going to be paying out incredible amounts of money to all of these people who, because of the technology, 80% of the people who are injured in battle are saved. But they're saved with head injuries, with two arms missing.
Oh, sure.
Okay, not like World War II, where, you know, better than 50% of the people who were injured in battle died. Okay, not now. It's maybe less than 20%. But we're going to be paying those bills forever. Okay, so, you know, maybe it would be better if we went the route of drones and black agency stuff. We'd probably be much better off, and I think in the long run, more successful. I don't have a big problem with that. I don't know whether you do or not, but I don't. As long as it's being done somewhere else, not here. I don't want them spying on me or you. But, you know, I think in terms of controlling other things that we have interests in, that's probably the smart way to go. Anyway, do I have time to give out contact information?
Yes, you do.
Okay. All right, the easiest way to get in touch with us is on the internet at Project Merlin, that's all one word, Project Merlin, no spaces, .com, that's the website, or Time Tracks, TimeTraks, no C, .org. So timetracks.org, projectmerlin.com. We're also on Facebook. The Merlin Project Research Group is on Facebook. You can get in touch with us that way. There's a toll-free number that you can call. It's 866-298-7688. I'll give it to you again. 1-866-298-7688. And then for those people who have none of that stuff and they're still dealing with the Postal Service, we have a mailing address. You can actually send us inquiries at Box 1241 in Seabrook, New Hampshire. That's one word, Seabrook, New Hampshire. Box 1241 in Seabrook, New Hampshire, and the zip up here is 03874.
All right, Paul. Listen, it was a pleasure talking to you again, man. Let's do it again in the near future, shall we?
And listen, when some of this stuff happens, have me back. We'll recap it. And if we were wrong, we have no problem with you holding our feet to the fire about any of this. So
count on it, brother. Take care. Tell Dr. George Hart I said hi, and we'll catch you down the road. Good night.
Thanks, John.
All right, we'll be back with Stan Johnson here in just a little bit. Hey, why go to sleep when you can hang with us all together, Coast to Coast AM?